What does that button do?
It turns the thing on.
It makes it so other people can hear what we just said.
Yeah.
Later.
Morning, Justin.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I am well, thank you. Good to see you.
It's good to see you.
Yeah. You're feeling a little more relaxed this morning.
That's right.
Yeah.
I got pajama pants on. Got my feet up on the desk. So.
Yeah. Justin looks like he's ready for Christmas morning. He's That's got right. his pajama pants on and yep. No, and like say with the little snacks this morning were a good little stocking stuffer. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Ho ho ho.
Yes, indeed. But tomorrow, Thanksgiving.
That's right.
Happy Thanksgiving to you,
Happy
Justin.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. Yeah. What are you most thankful for? Just name one thing.
Ah, grace. Great. Mm. Yeah.
How am I supposed to beat that? I'm going to say my family.
Yeah, that's a good. That's a great one.
That's a good one. Yeah,
I consider my family as part of grace.
I know.
So.
I know. That's. I know. Yeah. Okay, I'll go mercy then.
Okay, it's mercy is new every morning.
That's right.
Yes.
It's the flip side to grace.
Welcome to How I See It with me, Mark Pratt, and
Justin Sternberg. This is a podcast that works to counter cultural polarization through thoughtful conversations.
Yes.
I like
that. I've had some interesting discussions as far as...
yeah, about 100 of them.
About 100 of them? Oh, yeah. Well, but it was funny
Recorded
when
Recorded ones. Or you meet someone else.
I was talking about grace at CR on Friday.
That's
night.
Right.
So I've had a few, you know, interactions. And then in the service on Sunday, they talked about grace coming to an end.
Yeah.
And so yeah. Let's say that's been had some really good discussion
that's
over that.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Would you like to share some tidbits of those discussions? Or?
Most of the interactions was on the verse.
Yeah.
That I had at the end there where, you know, as far as 1 Peter
2:9-10.
Yeah. 9-10. You know, as far as all the yous in it and, you know, yeah. I got a lot of text saying, okay, what was that verse? What was that verse?
So cool. So Mark read 1 Peter 2:9-10 as he was teaching. And every time there was a you, he said, I want you guys to say out loud your name.
Yeah.
And it was really cool. It was really powerful. Me and Megan both are like, it's so weird to say your name out loud. Like, it feels weird.
Yeah.
But once we got over that, it was like, it was really cool to kind of hear that verse in that context.
Yeah.
You should try it at home.
Yeah. And I was surprised how somber. I wasn't anticipating that somberness, you know, of...
The room.
In that aspect of grace and, you know, the gifts.
Gotcha.
And, you know, it really kind of maintained, even though we were trying to do the celebrate, you know, piece of it, I was trying to, you know, I was surprised how somber it became, but that was probably more my observation just as the, you know, as everybody else in the room was kind of processing it.
Yeah.
Of course. Not of course, but you know, as the teacher, you've processed this and you have this, you know, image in your mind of, you know, what a reaction might be to what you say.
Yeah,
you
that's
know?
True. Yeah.
And it's like, it was more somber than I was anticipating, but
I'm sorry, Mark.
Oh, it's okay.
I won't cry next time.
It was, it was still good.
No, yeah. I know what you mean. I feel like, When speaking, it's almost never quite like you anticipate.
I hear you.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. That's
anyway.
Fair too. Yeah. But yeah.
So.
I'm thankful for grace. You're thankful for mercy.
That's right.
And your family.
Thankful for Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Just actually, the opportunity to reflect.
Yeah. I actually posted a picture of some spring dogwoods and the other day and I said, I'm thankful for spring.
There you go.
You know?
Yeah.
How often do you say you're thankful for spring at Thanksgiving? I was like,
yeah.
That's how I'm feeling. So get here quickly. No, it's all good. But I do miss spring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're waiting. Your anticipation. You kind of dread the cold and the dark of the winter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm trying to, you know.
I know.
Not use the word dread. So you.
Okay. Sorry.
Don't drag me down. Come on, man.
I just triggered Justin.
That's right.
But yes, that's why he's in his pajama pants this morning.
Right. That's what, you know, that's what winter's about.
I guess so.
You know?
Yeah.
For me.
I understood.
It's about relaxing.
Make sure you get dressed and get a shower today so we're not falling.
Optionally. Anyway.
Yes.
We've talked about marriage counseling before, right?
We have.
We've done an episode on that.
We have.
But we thought it would be interesting, particularly because, you know, you do this somewhat regularly, and we were just asked, marriage counseling. Yes, both. Megan and I were asked recently to do it for a couple, which is kind of fun. And
enjoy. Do what?
This thing I'm going to say.
Oh.
That I haven't said yet. Pre-marital counseling.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So this idea of, you know, what is premarital counseling? Like,
sure.
Preparing you for marriage, basically. I mean, as we enter this thing, it's like, what are we even supposed to be accomplishing?
Because such a simple word.
Yeah, exactly.
Pre-marriage.
Pre-marriage.
So complex.
Yes. Yeah, and it's supposed to be like, after you do this, you're going to have a great marriage. And
there
it's like,
you go.
You know, Megan and I did premarital counseling before we married, and we learned, like, the book we're reading with, you know, with them and stuff. Like, all the stuff in there, we learned the hard way, even with premarital counseling. So it's like, what are we doing? Well, I think in some ways, maybe it's just setting up the beginnings of a foundation to build on. What do you think?
Sure.
What is premarital counseling to you, Mark?
Well,
you're the professional.
From my perspective, it's that it reminds me of open-mindedness. Mm. You know, in that context, you know, you take this, well, especially like say in your situation, you take this, you know, sweet young couple that, you know, hasn't been married before, you know, they've come out of their own individual family systems, you know, with their own unique family systems, you know, cause each family system is unique. That's what makes every marriage unique from my perspective.
Yeah.
You know, so you take all of that, and I think you need to create that open-mindedness that says, okay, I've come from here and I'm joining in relationship with somebody who's come from all the way over there.
Yeah.
And I don't care if you grew up in the same church, you know, we just don't realize how different we are. Yeah. Until we're married, and you know, and you can do, I mean, prepare, enrich, there's all kinds of assessments you can do out there, you know, that kind of rank, you know, how you would view family dynamics, you know, parenting, you know, money, sex, all those topics, you know, and you can say, you're compatible in this area, in this area. And it's like, no, sorry. You know, I mean, granted, don't get me wrong. The assessments have value.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you're just beginning to create what I would call, you know, the beginnings of self and others awareness.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially in this context of, you know, young people getting married.
Who, sure.
You know, kind of maybe they've been on their own for a little bit or whatever. But yeah, I agree.
Well, and I think like the parrots, you know, they have the saving your marriage before it starts stuff, but they also have like saving your second marriage before it's a part of it, you know? So you think about that in that context,
that's an author in a book.
Just yes.
The parrot. He's not referring to birds.
Leslie Parrot.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the book that I'm referring to is called Saving Your Marriage Before It Starts.
That's correct.
Which may be referred to as what?
Simbus,
yes. Before your train left the station, I want to make sure we are all on it. So carry away.
No, but they also have another series that is, you know, geared towards remarriage.
Oh, cool.
You follow me?
Yeah.
So it's not always, when we're talking about pre-marriage, we're not always talking, in our day and age, we're not always talking about, you know, people who have just been married for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, there's also those dynamics in place and I think, you know, there's no doubt that remarriage can be tougher than that first time around, you know?
Yeah. Cause not only do you have failed expectations from the previous marriage.
Sure.
But now you have new expectations or like rules, yeah. maybe.
Sure.
Like, I won't do that, or that's
no
not
one's
gonna
ever
going
to treat yeah. me like that again. Yeah. yeah. It's kind of like that. I like Jimmy Evans talks about the woman. Have you've seen Dances with Wolves?
Yeah.
You know, but there's the lady that's named Stands with a Fist. Yeah. You know, and it's kind of that image, you know, it's yeah. like someone has hurt me before.
Yeah.
So now I'm just less vulnerable.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so now, you know, there's no longer innocent until proven guilty type thing.
Right.
You know?
Right. Guilty yeah. till proven innocent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, those dynamics are what come into play.
I think in both cases, though, there are some similarities that sure. that I've been thinking about, which is that when you are in a pre-marriage relationship, typically, depending on how long you've been together and what kind of life you've done together, mm-hmm. you're still in a certain state of being that desires to be your best self for that person.
Sure.
It's the wooing, right?
Sure. It's the mask.
Yeah, but I mean, wow. Went right to mask. No, I mean, did. It's like,
well,
this
our
desire
dating culture
to
creates
be,
this.
Well, hang on.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Justin.
I want to hear your mask theory, but no, I'm talking about like, I just remember with Megan dating, mm-hmm. When there was a schism or disagreement, or whatever, like, I would try and rise above because I loved her. Mm-hmm. Right. And like, it's that wooing state that we are in pre-marriage that says, I'm going to be the best version of myself for you because I love you and I, you know, I want to be with you forever. And it's like kind of this thing that we don't realize at some point after getting married. It could, some people, it's the minute you say I do. For some people, it's a year. Some people, I mean, they mentioned a 3-year average honeymoon period kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But there's a switch that turns off and says, okay, now I should be able to be the worst version of me to you because you accept me for my, you know, like there's almost a switch and a reversal that goes the other direction to where.
You know what that's called?
No, I bet you do.
Human nature.
Yeah. 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 But I think, you know, pre-marriage, whether it's a second marriage, third marriage, whatever, or even there is that state we're in while dating.
Sure.
That I think is, I guess I've never seen it not be there. So I think it's important to call that out.
That's why I call it a mask. But it is that aspect of putting your best foot forward.
Right. But a mask I think of as obligatory, right? Like I need to hide myself. It's almost like a shame-based thing where this feels different to me. It feels more like a mask you really want to wear. Yeah, it's like a mask that you're hoping to become. It's almost like aspirational, and this woman brings out the best in me, and you might believe that mask really is you because this woman brings out the best in me, and look who I can be because I'm with her, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like it's a little bit different, and not that it's not a mask, just that it feels different than when
it's
we...
It's a pretense.
Yeah. So anyway, what do you think? What are your thoughts?
Lots of thoughts, but at the same time...
Does that feel true? I mean, does that make sense to you, though? Like, is that a thing?
Well, that is a thing.
Okay.
That is a thing that we put our best foot forward. And granted, I think our dating culture promotes that.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's like, I'm going to do these things. I'm going to, you know, I know for Chris and I can remember how big of an adjustment it was when we actually got married and started living together, you know. She just saw a different context of me and didn't realize what my job entailed.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, sawdust and sweat kind of, you know, surmised my work life. And so, you know, I like the smell of sawdust. I personally do, you know, that kind of thing. But she had always, you know, we had in the process of us being together, you know, or
sorry about the beeps.
That's okay. The dating process, you know, I was typically, I smelled a lot better.
Yeah.
You know, because it was, you know, it was weekends and stuff. And
now, would you say that was a mask? just the fact that you were clean when you would go out with her.
No,
I guess that's kind of my point. Yeah. I wouldn't say, call that a mask. I would say that's just the nature of
that was the nature wooing. Of the circumstance, yeah. But yet it was a facet.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. to where, and maybe that's kind of, yeah, not a deliberate mask, but it's like, I could still say it was because I wouldn't go on a date with yeah. Chris.
Smelling like sawdust.
I'd just come home from work and say, okay, I'm heading out for a date, you know, and show up smelling like sawdust yeah. and sweat, that kind of thing. Yeah. But so, yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I hear where you're coming from in that process, but I think it yeah. was more or less, you know, what was acceptable, what was unacceptable in dating.
Yeah.
You know, but so yeah, that was a, those snacks catching up with me, but that was a pretense, you know, of us, you know, just in that dating dynamic versus, you know, living together in a full-time basis to experience yeah. that broadness
yeah.
that we do. And I think, you know, there's nothing wrong with maintaining that dating part of a relationship.
Right.
You know, when I say mask, is there's nothing wrong with, but yet I'm also recognizing this isn't who I am on a consistent basis.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Putting that best foot forward.
Yeah. Cause that's the thing. Like we all have ugly parts, whether sure. it's smells or attitudes or, you know what I mean? Toenails that are too long, whatever it is, right? Like we all socks on the floor, whatever.
Sure.
There is no person who doesn't have those flaws.
Yes.
But during dating, you know, we're doing our best to hide those or minimize those. Or like I said earlier, like even we get better at some of those things thinking this woman has changed me.
Mm-hmm.
But I honestly believe it's the process that's changed you. And mm-hmm. once that, you know, it's the state, the nature, the
wooing.
The chemical mm-hmm. things that are happening in your
euphoria.
Body, the euphoria. Yeah, exactly. That's what's changing you.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think, you know, you could potentially rewire some of those synapses, right? Like
sure.
through that process, but it's more likely that you attribute it to this woman, which is dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because once you get married, you start seeing each other's ugly sides and the, mm-hmm. the switch flips. It's like, this woman no longer does it for me, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think it's a healthy thing, even in marital relationship, you know, we date, you know, I'll say, you know, based on the 80% that is a person, you follow me, we
yeah.
see the good, we see the, and from my perspective, even in marriage, I believe all those characteristics remain.
Yeah, the good.
The good.
Yeah.
But our tendency is when we experience a certain dynamic, and like you're saying, more of a negative dynamic, we're almost identifying the other 20%.
Yeah.
And we can focus on one or the other.
Yeah.
And it makes a tremendous difference
yeah.
in the relationship. Yep. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think for me, some of the saddest, you know, when it comes to pre-marriage stuff, you know, some of the sadder comments I hear are, you know, I wish my parents had gotten divorced versus staying together. Because I think when I grew up in such fighting, you know, such chaotic,
turmoil.
You know, turmoil, I think that was harder for me than if my parents would have just gotten divorced.
Yeah.
And to me, that's a sad thing.
Yeah.
Because here you have this couple who, you know, really gutted it out, you know, for the sake of, you know, family and kids and so forth. And I think about that and it's like, man, if they just had someone to talk to, you know, if we could have just dealt yeah. with a couple of those things, it would have made such a difference. And that's the sad yeah. part to me. And I think
that's why you're a marriage and family therapist. It makes sense.
But, you know, it's yeah. just to that point of, you know, recognizing, yeah, it's going to be difficult and there's going to be there's conflict. And, you know, I think that's another part of the pre-marriage counseling is to be able to recognize that conflict is okay.
Yeah.
And it's normal.
Yeah.
because we have this tendency to think about things. Well, you know, we hear from couples who say, well, we've never had an argument in 20 years. It's like, well, I'm sorry, you know, I really am sorry. Cause you
very don't, backed up.
Yeah. You don't have a lot of intimacy in that. If it is, cause it's just one of you isn't known, in my opinion, at that point. And I think, you know, that's where that process and granted, it's not to say there aren't, you know, godly couples who, you know, resolve conflict better,
right?
But to say that we've had none, you know, that concerns me more than the couple who's saying, yeah, we, you know, have some disagreements and, you know, routinely it's about this subject or this area. And it's like, okay, that's good. You know, cause we can start with that and start working through it. And I think that's part of what pre-marriage is, you know, in that aspect of, okay, there's going to be this 20%. You know, that you're going to be faced with. And what do you do with that?
Yeah.
And I think that's where, like you're saying, I think we do change, you know, and we, you know, early on, but I think it's from my perspective, you know, it's the 10 years and beyond. 10-year marriages and beyond that really define where change starts to happen.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's like almost at, you know, there's always the 7-year itch type dynamics, you know, those difficult years.
Because humans are pretty resilient, right? So you can put up with 7 to 10 years of stuff.
Yeah.
But after, there's something in there, right? Yep. I guess what you're saying, where the resilience starts to wear off and...
Well, and I think at those times, stressors, you know, it's most it's
something to do with timing too.
It has a lot to do with life cycle stages.
Your kids.
You know, where your kids are at, you know, because, you know, you've been married 7 years. Typically, you know, your kids are starting to enter into preschool, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the roles are changing and, you know, my identity is changing because now I, you know, have these kids that are going away from the home and, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, after that, you're kind of into adolescence, which has its whole other dynamic, early adolescence, teenagers, you know, as they're crossing over. So you can see these different dynamics that come into play with each stage and what goes along with it. So, I mean, it connects together, but being able to recognize, there's going to be some conflicts that come just based on the fact. And I think that's the pre-marriage piece, you know, especially with these younger couples. It's like
preparation.
Yeah. It's like, I had no idea. You know, I mean, it was really that way to the point of there. I just never imagined that you could do that or that you'd see the, you know, parenting that way.
Right.
Now, granted, it makes perfect sense.
Right.
But from my perspective, your perspective seems way wrong.
It seems foreign.
Wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's part of that pre-marriage dynamic.
Yeah.
Is to be able to recognize, we are far different than we're able to recognize at this point.
Right.
But that difference isn't wrong.
And the thing is,
And to be able to communicate that or create that understanding now, it's like, oh, that's what Justin and Megan were telling us about. And now we're seeing it and suddenly it's normalized it.
Yeah.
Whereas in other cases without that conversation, that pre-marriage counseling,
all kinds of
it's
wrong.
Like something's wrong.
Yeah.
And it's either you or it's me.
Yeah.
And I've got an idea. It's you at this
point. Yeah. Yeah. It's good. Yeah. So premarital counseling, pre-marriage is kind of hopefully about setting up some proper expectations for what to expect. And
sure.
Because, you know, I was just thinking about like the scenario, the 10 years, 7 year itch and the stressors that are around those times. There's just no way to cover that ground in pre-marriage.
No, I hear you.
You know what I mean? So it's more about setting up proper expectations for how to do life together in the long haul.
Sure.
And learning to put on your, you know, your boxing gloves properly. And
fighting rules.
Yeah, exactly. And where it's the boundaries, what are the boundaries of our fights and Yep. And how many rounds do we get to go? And who's
and
the
what, yeah. And what can we spend individually without talking about it as a couple, you know, yeah. around finances, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, because we look at finances so completely different based on how we yeah. grew up. Chris and I definitely yeah. that was one of our bigger issues was yeah. the financial differences between us.
Yeah, the other thing too, I mean, obviously sex, especially in, you know, younger couples who maybe who haven't had sex yet, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. As it was with Megan and I, you know, mm-hmm. we had no idea what expectations there were. Well, I can't say that. I mean, I had, you know, sure. viewed my fair share, overly fair share of porn. So I had sure. those expectations, yep. you know what I mean? And man, that's when that's like, not only is it super hard mm-hmm. expectations wise, but it's also hard to talk about in pre-marriage or any time,
sure.
you know, even in marriage, like with others, counseling, whatever. I mean, it's just, you know, and that's one of those subjects.
Yeah. And that's, and I think that's one of the, you know, areas, especially, you know, around sex and pre-marriage counseling, you know, regardless of whether someone has been right. together previously right. or, you know, saying it's like
every partner is different.
Yeah, yeah. But being able to recognize our families don't always teach us how to talk about that right. subject, you know? And so often in our family systems, you know, it will tend to be a perspective that, you know, sex is bad.
Yeah.
You know, don't do this. Sex is bad.
Right.
You know,
right.
But then suddenly we're married.
And it's supposed to be good
and
all
it's,
of a sudden.
And it's all of a sudden.
Flip the switch.
Yeah. Flip yeah. the switch.
Yeah.
And it's like, really?
Yeah.
How do we, you know, so being able to recognize that purpose for sex, you know, talk about that and the ability to be able to recognize, okay, you know, learning how to talk about, okay, what's good for you? What works for right. you? What, you know, what's uncomfortable, what doesn't work, mm-hmm. you know, in such a way that's, you know, like any other topic, we're yeah. able to talk about it in a way that helps us meet each other's needs in ways that are beneficial.
Yeah. And like,
and I think, you know, no, regular married couples have to learn how to do that, yes. you know,
yep.
but I think that pre-marriage piece, and I'll be honest, you know, I'll do the pre-marriage counseling in a lot of cases. I mean, every time I, you know, marry a couple or whatever, but it's interesting in that context, you know, I'll always follow up. It's like, okay, and let's get back together in a year.
Yeah.
You know, because I think it adds. So now, you know, once that first year is up, you know, then we're starting to recognize, oh, that's what that was about. And that was that. And then mm-hmm. we're able to kind of get those, what could be a ditch, you know, or a trench, we're able to kind of, you know, fill that in such a way that says, okay, maybe, you know, mm-hmm. we can change some of these habits early mm-hmm. on before we just get entrenched in them, that kind of thing. Yeah. That's why I like to follow up, you know, afterwards.
And, yeah, that's good. And it sets the expectation too that, it's not a like pat on your butt. You're on your way. Yeah. Good luck. Yeah. It's like, no, this is
an ongoing.
Yeah. This is just setting up some expectations, but the real work is mm-hmm. after mm-hmm. this premarital counseling is done. That's when sure. the rubber hits the road. So
no
ideally,
doubt.
Right. Like counseling happens hand in hand with practicing what you're, you know what I mean?
Oh, sure.
Where premarital yeah. counseling is a little bit harder to practice yep. some of that. I mean, obviously you can, and I think that's also the intention, right, is to make sure they start working on some of those things.
Sure.
You know, in the pre-marriage state, as they planning weddings, as they're finding a house, all that stuff, like,
sure.
you know, there's opportunities there, but
yeah.
Yeah, but that is the unique nature of premarriage counseling. It's like you're talking about a thing that's not a thing yet, so it's mm-hmm. not as easy to practice those principles.
No doubt. And there's a part of me that I would, you know, in what I do, the passion that I have, that kind of thing, you know, I think not that it's full on pre-marriage counseling, but I think, you know, relationship classes our school systems could benefit from relationship mm-hmm. classes,
yeah,
you know, early on that kind of have a healthy, you know, understanding yeah. of what healthy relationship looks like, you know, that kind of thing. Cause well, so often, you know, even when we do the Marriage on the Rock classes, which are open to, you know, pre-marriage and, you know, that kind of thing, you know, so often we'll hear, man, I wish we could have gotten this information, you know, from the older couples. They'll say, you know, I wish we could have had this 20 years ago, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing. And being able to recognize that, you know, doing, you know, meeting with a couple like you guys are doing, or reading a book, or going through a video series actually does increase our success in marriage.
Yay.
To where, yeah, really.
It's not useless.
Exactly. Just wanted to affirm that process. Yeah. To where, yeah, cool. There is, you know, basically creating that understanding. Mm. And I think it is part of that normalization process, mm-hmm. you know, that says, oh, other people have ran into this mm-hmm. issue before. Mm-hmm. It's not just you and me, and it's you and me against the world, and we're the only ones messed up.
Yeah.
In that process, it's like, no, everybody has their issues.
Yeah.
And some people are able to talk about it with other people and, you know, maybe find some tools.
Yeah. It's hard to talk about that without overemphasizing, because I can't, like, we probably said many, many times marriage is hard in our first. Yeah. It's like, we also want to be careful about, like, overemphasizing that, but it is true, and it is,
yeah,
that's a good expectation, but also it's like, but also it's great, you know. So
I like the garden analogy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because, yeah, it's going to take effort. It's going to take work, and you have to maintain a garden.
Yeah.
But yet there are a lot of blessings that come with it if we just choose to put the effort in. And the best way to put the effort in is on a consistent and routine basis. We can't wait till the weeds have overgrown everything.
Yeah.
Because then it's more work.
Yeah.
And it's good, and it's easier to, you know, kind of
more work. There's less harvest. I don't know.
Bounty.
Yeah, less bounty due to the neglect. Yeah, so it's like doubly hard because you have to make up lost ground, and you're not going to get the same benefits yet.
Sure.
Right? For a while, till you can kind of...
Yep.
Yeah, that's good. I like that analogy.
And I think so...
Secretly, I wanted us to do this episode so I could just share it with them and be like, this way you get Mark 2.
Hey, Mark, I got this couple. What do you think about doing pre-marriage counseling as a topic? It's that's like,
right.
Sure.
I got my fishing rod, reeled them right in.
Good deal. I'm all for it. I'm all for helping any young couple to, And I think, you know, from as I'm thinking about you guys doing this, you know, being able to share, you know, that, yeah, it was tough, you know, at eras. And yet I still think, you know, marriage is the greatest growth producing opportunity that we have, you know, short of just one-on-one relationship with Christ, you know, and I'm and that's typically what I get most sad about. Is when I think about how many divorces are occurring, you know, and the growth opportunities that were missed out on.
Yeah, it's stunting growth.
Yes.
Almost embedding a lack of growth.
Right. Yeah. And I'm going to pull back, because I'm not saying that, you know, in the aspect of someone who's had a divorce. And, you know, I recognize there's a lot of factors that come into play, substance and, you know, abuse. Yeah. And I'm not minimizing any of that. I'm just saying it's sad when I recognize that, you know, and this is the other part of the story that I'll routinely hear. And it kind of reaffirms my 80-20 type principle. It's like, how often I've heard, you know, well, my parents couldn't get along. They never got along. Sometimes they even divorced, and now they're good friends. You know, they both remarried, but, you know, suddenly they're good friends again.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's sad, you know, when couples aren't able to find that, because there again, all the things that attracted you to somebody, from my perspective, have been there all along. So, you know, it's like,
do you think that's true though? I mean, you already said,
short of substance and abuse, you know, and, you know, where a person changes, or, you know, an addiction type thing.
Yes. I guess what I'm saying is, like, just going back to the previous theory I was talking about, like, for the most part, okay, I'm trying to think it through.
Go ahead.
I think it's the easiest to present the best version of yourself in that dating relationship. Mm-hmm. So in a fresh relationship with a girl and with an intention towards marriage. And so I'm trying to decide if I think that stuff goes away or not. But I feel like the ability to reach that peak of who you are does it go away? I don't know.
Hear me out.
Okay.
Okay. In the dynamic you were thinking about, from my perspective, I would say that change is an aspect of priority.
Yes. Agreed.
You follow me?
Oh, yeah.
So when I am dating, you are my priority.
Yep.
When, not you personally, of course, but yeah.
That's good. But
in that process.
It should be the one you're dating, Mark.
Exactly. Thank you for the clarification.
This podcast is important. Exactly.
The words we use matter. Yes. But being able to recognize, okay, I did what I did at the beginning of our relationship because you were a priority to me. Human nature kicks in and suddenly that priority changes.
Yep.
So now sometimes work is the priority. Yep. My friends, my family can be reprioritized to where now my marital relationship comes in at 2, 3, 4, really starting to get into trouble for at 5, you know.
Yeah.
So the reality of it is if we want to go back, it's not a simple process. But at the same time, it's possible, plausible. But either way,
plausible.
But the process becomes: I have to go back and start doing the things that I once did to bring back that level of relationship. Yeah. And so, you know, I mean, I think, you know, running into this all the time, you know, where, you know, touch tends to go away. Physical touch tends to go away, you know, because we've replaced it with just sex. So now, I have this typically I have this female that's basically saying he doesn't touch me anymore short of the bedroom.
Yeah.
You know, or I know if he's touching me, he's desiring to have sex type thing, you know, and that just basically is a reprioritizing. So if we want to bring that wholeness back, and then he'll complain, well, we don't have sex, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But you know, if we want to bring that wholeness back, we got to recognize, no, we need non-sexual touch, you know, in the process of relationship. So then I'm recognized, you know, that couple's able to recognize, well, my body isn't just a sex object. You know, I'm someone you care about, you cherish, that kind of thing. So that's just another.
No, I love all that. Now hear me out.
Yes, go right ahead. Let her rip. I love all that, but let me speak.
Everyone knows that's how I am. No. I do appreciate that, and I think that's a good way to reframe the conversation about priorities. I guess the perspective that I'm coming from is in the pre-marriage relationship where it's an unhealthy level of priority. So, because that I'm kind of coming even from my own perspective and, you know, how I kind of remember being, Megan was everything. And to the degree where I would argue was unhealthy, I would say it didn't negatively impact my life in a ton of ways, but it probably did in ways I didn't realize it, but definitely
If Megan hadn't been more healthy, it could have definitely had a profound impact on you based on the fact that you saw her as number one versus,
she could have embraced that as being, that's right. And then. So I guess that's kind of where I was coming from in the sense of there's a level of priority that's unhealthy and therefore I did things that I will not ever do again and or should not do. Just in terms of priority, right? Like one example I can think of is leaving work to go visit her. Like, no, you should do work. That's what a man does. That's what you're supposed to do. I see your look and I think it's okay to go get lunch. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying like when I abandon the responsibilities that I'm responsible for
So where's that line?
Well, I think you have to figure that out. But,
sure. Because there might be...
what I'm saying, though, right?
I do know what you're saying.
Unhealthy level of...
And I would say, here again, I'm clarifying. When I say number one, that's second to God.
Yeah.
God, my relationship with Jesus Christ always has to be foundational mm-hmm. to do healthy relationship.
Yeah.
Because then I'm actually able to recognize better prioritization.
Yeah, that's good.
Because it's easy to make work, you know, because that's tied into my identity.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to make work my priority. And then I tell my wife, yes, I love you. That's why I'm working 70 hours a week. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, no, that really has little to do with that desire to provide, which I'm understanding part of the difference between the male female dynamic, you know, but at the same time, when you're talking about Megan being too high or, you know, that the healthy number one, I think there's also something to be said for we can make that person Jesus to us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is unhealthy because ultimately we're, you know, she's a great Megan. She's a lousy Jesus.
Right.
So when I am, you know, or when in relationship, I have too high priority, you know, on that person and I am. And that and I would kind of put it in the terms of that person becomes my reason for living.
Right.
You know,
right.
Then I am. That is an unhealthy relationship. It's, you know, it's I would say codependent.
Yeah.
You know, because all my happiness depends on your happiness.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's unhealthy relationship. And that would be an area where, you know, we'd have to say, okay, yeah, we need to start working on some of these other priorities. Not that they would necessarily listen to you at that point mm-hmm. or me for that matter, but I'm saying, you know, sometimes it would be a matter of saying, you guys aren't ready yet.
Yeah.
You know, but a lot of people won't necessarily listen at that point either.
Right. Yeah.
Go ahead. Tell me you like what I'm saying, but it's your turn to speak.
I like what you're saying. No. I do. I think that's great. I think often too, like we'll hold up the old dating version of ourselves as like our spouse will hold that as the ideal, or I might I might about myself.
Sure.
But I think it's probably fair to say that majority of dating relationships aren't perfect relationships. They're, sure. I would argue that, you know, there's probably a lot of that replacing number one, you know, and putting them there. And therefore, again, the way we operate.
Help me understand that one, replacing number one.
Putting, you know, kind of like rising to the top of priority list over God, over everything, right?
I gotcha. Think
that seems not uncommon, especially in the environment I grew up in where, you know, it was a church environment and it was like when couples started dating, it was just reached it again, more often than not, I saw priorities shift to the degree where it seemed unhealthy to me, even in my young state and looking back to, like, I say all that to say that if we hold that as the ideal, the unhealthy version of ourselves that put you at a priority above God, then that we're always going to have a bad set of expectations too.
Agreed.
So like saying you need to be like you were when you're dating may not be the correct statement. And I would argue maybe rarely is the right statement. It's more about, I think learning from some of the things we did in dating and how the priority was higher. And that still needs to be the case. Mm-hmm. Like they still need to be, you know, number one priority besides God or whatever. And shifting some of those things to look more like dating, but in a healthier context. I don't know that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's your turn.
Oh, okay. My turn to speak. But I think, you know, we, in that wooing that you describe.
Yeah.
Okay. It's easy to recognize that we lose the desire to pursue our spouse.
Yeah.
You follow me?
Yeah.
It can tend to minimize, you know, because there are other things.
Because we won, right? Like that's,
there's something to be said for that. Yeah. Yes, that's the human nature component.
Yeah.
It's like, I especially as males, you know, we've achieved you know, yeah. our desire. So now we're on to pursuing other things, you know, and so therefore work does become more important because now I want the boat, I want the car, I want all the other things that go along with having my wife, you know, and yet from her perspective, all of these other things become more important than she is. And my tendency is to say, oh, you're the most important person to me. But that's not reflected in my actions. What my actions say is all these other things are more important to me. So I just, bless you, sir. My words don't replace my actions.
Yeah.
And so often that's the difficult process is it's like, you know, I love you.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I do all that I do.
Yeah.
And no, that's not always the case. And that's, you know, coming from a reformed workaholic, you know, in that process. But yeah, it is to the point of being able to say, okay, what does it look like? And how do we redefine this? Because I think that is a part of it is I have to, in a lot of cases, redefine my identity.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, you know, in that relationship you were talking about, it's like that person may not have even liked their identity. So now I have this other person that's adding value to my identity.
Yeah.
Now, you know, this is going to be wonderful. This is going to be great. Somebody who loves me unconditionally, who accepts me all the time. Okay. Unhealthy expectation.
Right.
You know, but yet it's understandable, you know, based on that identity that I have, you know, so being able to, you know, walk with couples in such a way that says, okay, yeah, your identity will shift. You will become Mr. and Mrs.
Yep.
You know, and you know, this is just the first step in a number of identity changes. Because your jobs are going to change, you know, you're going to have kids, you're going to be Susie or Johnny's mom, you know, someday. And that identity, you know, or dad, you know, there's going to be these series of identity changes that come in this process. And each identity change is going to have some conflict or some, you know, rupture and repair that goes along with that. Hopefully the repair, but you know, it's going to be an adjustment. There's going to be certain aspects of conflict. And that when, you know, as we're talking with young couples, being able to recognize, there's absolutely nothing wrong when that conflict comes. It just means that something has changed.
Yeah.
And I may not even necessarily be sure of what it is, but that's where self and others awareness kind of comes into that dynamic.
It's also where iron sharpens iron comes in, right?
Can
because,
be.
And it, right. Can, that's, yes, can be. Yeah. Because I mean, a marriage that your rough edges are going to rub against your partner and vice versa.
Yep.
And so that's an opportunity.
Yeah. Nice job. Yes. That's an opportunity.
That's a markism.
Opportunity for conflict.
Yeah. And so to slowly sharpen each other.
Yeah.
Although that metaphor conflicts because sharp edges sharpening. Yeah. But you get the point.
Yeah. But, you know, sharp isn't bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You take a scalpel, for instance, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. The cut seems to be, but ultimately it's about healing eventually.
Yeah.
You know,
and learning to, you know, smooth down some rough edges and sharpen other ones that should be sharpened. That's an opportunity you have together to grow together and to hear what they're saying when your flaws are hurting them or, you know, rubbing them in the wrong way. And that's an opportunity, like you said, growth. There's a lot of growth.
Yep.
So many growth opportunities in marriage, right?
And I think that's where, you know, God's word comes to play. It's a double-edged sword. You know, it has that ability to cut yet heal in that process, you know, and as we both spend time in God's word, you know, God's able to use his word to heal me, you know, apart from Chris. And yet she's also a part of that healing process because it's like she's bringing it into my awareness. Revealing. That's the word I was looking for. She's revealing my weaknesses, you know, and, you know, and she does a good job of lovingly calling that out in most cases to the point of saying, hey, do you see how much time you're spending doing this or doing that? And, you know, in comparison to how much it's like, good point, valid point,
Yeah. It's good.
So, you know, she helps me create those boundaries that, you know, are saying, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Another thing that we do is in pre-marriage is we look at these things that are really good about the person.
Mm-hmm.
And often, I mean, this is something actually the couple brought up, but like often in marriage, it flips to where that's the thing you resent.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. so that's a common
yeah.
thing you've talked with me about too, is like how trying to get them to remember what they mm-hmm. appreciate about that person. It's that same thing. And I don't know, for me, as always, the stick comes to mind, right?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This thing, you know, like, for instance, you know, you mentioned work, but mm-hmm. he's a hard worker, you know, mm-hmm. and that's what drew me to him. That's what,
mm-hmm.
you know, made me really love him. And I could just see that he had that integrity to get up and go to work and mm-hmm. really just, you know, man up. Right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like you said, in marriage, it all kind of shifts. And mm-hmm. well, that same characteristic is now bothersome because I want him home with me,
mm-hmm.
you know? And, yeah. And being able to understand both as him and as her, the mm-hmm. stick nature where, yeah, you like this end of the stick, but it comes with this other end, mm-hmm. which is maybe doesn't come home as early as you'd like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not good. Like, I'm not saying that's good. Like, he needs to learn how to keep that stick balance. Right. And that's
sure.
my whole theory, right? Is like, he needs to understand that while you're a hard worker, it cannot, you know, come at this price of, you know, betraying your wife by
sure.
not, you know, and vice versa. She has to have that same balance in her mm-hmm. mind of that really bothers me, but it's also what wooed me to him.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, it's still what I value and love about him is that he'll get up, get to work.
He's sure.
making it happen for our family. And like being able to keep that in balance
mm-hmm.
is a challenge, but I think important. What do you think?
Well, I was thinking about the idea of balance. I would propose in some ways the differences between men and women.
Mm-hmm.
Men will not, in my opinion, have the same level of balance where relationship is concerned. I think women were designed differently, you know, and I think relationship is a higher priority for them.
Yeah.
And they have a greater concern about maintaining relationship than guys do. So, you know, the stick analogy, while good, I don't think we can always say, well, you just need to balance like I balance.
Yeah.
I think sometimes I have to recognize that, yeah, part of who Chris is designed to be as that easer, if you will, that helpmate, is that understanding of being able to help me recognize when my relationship priorities are out of line.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, women are, let's be honest. The majority of couples that come into my office are typically not led by the men.
Yeah.
You follow me?
Right. Yep.
I'm not trying to speak out of just my experience, but yes, that is the where women have that dynamic. And I think so often in our maleness, we can see that as crazy jealousy. You follow me? When the priorities are, when our wives say, hey, our relationship is, you know, suffering, you know, we see that, you know, you're doing this, you're doing that.
Yeah.
We see it as crazy jealousy.
As in they're wrong for.
Yes. They are just too sensitive. They have that. But in the reality, I believe that's healthy jealousy.
Right.
Just like God has, you know, his name is jealous. You know, one of his names is jealous to the point of he doesn't want anything else to, not that it's, you know, minimizes who he is, but he just cares about us that much to where he doesn't want other things coming between us and him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, he's given that design, if you will, more so towards women. And I think as men, it's helpful for us to reflect on that, to be able to say, because I think so often, and this is part of that pre-marriage counseling piece, if you will, write this one down. No, I'm just kidding. Avoiding the defensiveness.
Yeah.
You know, because so often our tendency is to react out of defensiveness in that process. You don't know. Well, No, just listen for a second and try to just accept influence because this is something you probably need to hear. And if you're just becoming defensive, then you're likely not hearing. And
I mean, I can write that down and I could say that. But how do you tell someone, remember, don't be defensive? Like how?
That's a good job. Nice job. You just told me not to be defensive. now, right. What I need you to do is tell me what it looks like in me.
Okay. To not be defensive.
To not be defensive.
Yeah, I like that. Okay.
You follow me?
It's all not... right. That.
When I start, you know.
I'm gonna write down.
I was joking, but that's okay.
I have a list. So I'm adding it.
What does defensiveness look like in me?
Right.
And then, you know, that process of it's likely going to involve the word you versus I.
Yeah.
You know, if you didn't, you know, I wouldn't. That's right. That's the beginning right. of defensiveness.
I got it written down.
You know, avoiding defensiveness is a phrase that helps us avoid defensiveness is the ability to say, okay, I hear where you're coming from. Help me understand that better.
Yeah. Help me understand. I'm going to write that down. Help me understand.
This is free to you, Justin. I promise.
The bill's in the mail. Yeah. Yeah. That's good. You say that a lot, you know. Outside this context, help me understand. Like you say that yourself personally, but you also say it in context of these type of things. And I think that's just a really good, practice if you're feeling defensive to go try and embrace that terminology. Not just the terminology, though, the philosophy, right?
Yeah. The desire to understand, because so often in the midst of a conflict, and that's kind of what began, you know, this had this, you know, how I see it.
I don't mean like, help me understand why you're a jerk.
Exactly. Yeah. Really. Help me understand where that feeling's come from. Yeah. Help me understand what you saw in me. Help me understand, you know, and how did that impact you? Yeah. You know, this ability to, there again, others' awareness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if a person's having a conflict with me, you know, likely there's an issue and I need to know more about that to be able to come to a resolution. Not that we always have to have agreement,
right?
But there's the ability to create resolution.
Right. Yeah. And thinking again about common, you know, roles between men and women, I think it's very common for a man to not, to not think about other, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to process everything through his own skull, you know, and like, what does this mean for me? What is she saying? What does it mean for me? Versus how does this impact her and how am I impacting her? It's more like, what is she saying and how's it impacting me? What am I going to have to do now to placate her? And it's
go ahead. Sorry.
And I think women are better about that, but almost can become a flaw in the other direction, the codependence of like, oh, is he upset? What do I need to do to make sure he's not upset? And that's the other end of the continuum. That's also unhealthy. And there needs to be both directions move towards the middle, right? Where a man needs to be thinking, did I upset her?
Sure.
What did I do? That needs to happen more often. And a woman probably needs to think that less. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
And part of what you're describing there, and we can talk about this too, is the love styles.
Yeah.
That's a, you know, creating an awareness about love styles and what my tendencies are. Mm-hmm. Help me understand, you know, my family systems and where I've come from.
User friendly. That was the user episode friendly. On yes. love style.
Yes.
I was like, I know we didn't name it love styles.
User friendly. Sorry. Yeah. And yet... I think, you know, so often part of the communication dynamic we're running into is like you described, guys as a rule will tend to, they'll tend to think about things in their own mind so much so to the point of, I know we've talked about this, when in reality, the wife is just hearing that information the first time, you know, maybe after the fact or even right before the fact. So it seems as a big surprise to her. And, you know, he's looking at his wife saying, what do you mean? We've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. When in reality, that thought has never been verbalized.
Right, because he thinks it's a hive mind situation.
Sure.
She'll just intuit all my thoughts.
Exactly. Yeah. She knows, you know.
Which, and it to can be go fair.
Both directions.
I think there is. Women do have a supernatural ability sometimes to intuit things. I think maybe sometimes a guy gets confused because she didn't intuit this thing where she has in the past.
She has other things.
Of course you would know that because you knew that and you knew that.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And so often that
can. Use your words, guy.
Yeah. And so often that can also be a detrimental conversation or communication. Mm-hmm. I know what you're thinking.
That's right.
Yeah. I know why you did that.
Yeah.
It's like, no.
Yeah.
We got to pull that back.
Yeah.
So yeah, that ability to read minds and think we know what someone is thinking based on the action we saw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so many opportunities for growth in marriage.
Yes, there are.
And I think that's what pre-marriage is about, is embracing that concept.
Yes.
This is an ongoing opportunity of your life to grow and learn.
This is a sanctifying process. Mm-hmm. I can become more Christ-like through this process.
But also what you get back is an amazing relationship that's unlike any other relationship in your life.
Sure.
You know, the level of intimacy, physically, mentally, emotionally, you know, all those things, you can't have in any other type of relationship.
Sure.
So that's what you get in return. Mm-hmm. You know, you get this amazing relationship that, you know, because I was challenged about how many times I say marriage is difficult. It's like, no, but also this is the benefit of it, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk with anybody who's been married over 20 years and you know, you'll hear about, you know, the difficult times, but you'll also at the same time, if they have their stick in order, you know, you'll hear about the blessings that come through those difficult times. And when we've, you know,
thank you for using the stick. It's about time, Mark.
I try, Justin. I try.
I don't know all your clients, but I know some of them. And I want to hear them come out of the meeting and say, did you know Mark used your stick? That's my dastardly plan.
Yeah, I was talking with Mark and he mentioned your stick the other day. Justin would be very proud of that moment. Yes. So, but here again, we can think about it in terms of the continuum.
Yeah.
The continuum's kind of like your stick anyway. It is, so, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Finding that shared likeness, if you will.
Yep.
So, yeah. Well, by all means, Justin, blessings to you in that process and to that couple. Like you say, I know of them and I wish them all the blessings of a happy marriage. And yeah.
Any advice you have for them since you know who it is? This is your last opportunity to fix it before we mess it up.
Just make your relationship, Christ-centered and, you know, be like Justin and Megan. They're good folk. Yeah.
All right. Well.
Yeah.
It was all good up until.
Keep Christ the center. But that's what you guys do.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys do that. And so, it's okay to say be like Justin and Megan. Okay. Keeping Christ in the center.
Also be like Mark and Kristen.
Yeah.
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 You're like, exactly. You're good. You're exactly. Like, I can't argue because
it's like that. It's like that scripture. I think there's, you know, I think I can always wrestle with that.
Where Paul says.
Yeah. Be like me.
Yeah.
You know,
and
it's like, I'm okay with that. And if that means modeling Christ-centered relationship to the best of your ability, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same.
Yep.
That's a good way to say how we see it.
That's right. That's how we see it.
Hey, thank you for listening to our podcast. If you like How I See It, please do all the things that podcasts tell you to do. Subscribe, rate, review, follow us, and or talk nicely about us on social media. If you want to reach out, the email is us@howiseeit.click. Yep, I said .click, as in .click. Please tell your friends about this show, and we'll see you on the next one.